and welcome to the Ashley Webster Experience alongside producer Brian Solomon. Great guest this week, Chaz Palminteri. You know him. He's been everywhere. He's been on the stage. He's an actor, a screenwriter, producer, a playwright, and he just keeps going and going. Chaz, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Listen, it's funny. The other day, I guess we should start. Let's go to the beginning. It's always a good place to begin. You're from the Bronx.
Yeah.
Growing up in the Bronx, how was that? Explain.
It was
now
great.
We know that you wrote a play that became a movie, but just tell me in your own words.
I loved growing up there. Bronx was, I grew up 187 in Belmont, and it was a great, great upbringing. People always go, because I talk about the killing that I saw when I was 9 years old. They must have said, oh my God, must have been horrible growing up there. And I go, no, it was paradise. I go, no. Did it affect me when I saw that? I guess it did in a way, but I wrote about it, and obviously it worked out pretty well.
It taught you to stay in line, right?
I wrote about this thing that I saw when I was 9. I was sitting on my stoop, and this guy killed a man right in front of me. And many years later, I wrote about it, my relationship, getting to know the wise guys, and my father always said, don't hang out with those guys. And it was an interesting story.
Well, I just, funny enough, recently saw again the movie. I've seen it 4 or 5 times. Love it every time. A Bronx Tale, in the movie, of course, Robert De Niro plays your father.
My father, Lorenzo, yes.
Yes, the bus driver.
Yeah.
And what always struck me about the movie, and certainly the way you've written about your life then, was the pull and tug and pull between trying to stay on the straight and narrow, but at the same time, you have these, as you say, wise guys there. And it must be very tempting. They have nice cars. They have nice clothing.
Exactly.
They always seem to have money.
But the interesting thing, which made Bronx Tale different, and I always say Bronx Tale is not a gangster story, it's a family story, is that Sonny, the gangster, would tell me exactly the same things as my father told me. Stay out of the street. Don't do this. Don't do as I say. Go to school. Make something out of yourself. Don't hang around here. That's what made the story so unique. It was really the boy who had to get the best out of the father and the best out of Sonny and become a man. It's not about black and white, good and evil. Yeah. It's about gray and gray.
So, listen, in the early days, you wanted to be an actor always, involved in that kind of career. And so, like everyone else, I'm sure you struggled. I think I read somewhere that you were a bouncer at one point.
Yes. I was, I boxed. I used to bounce. And then finally, I was bouncing up in L.A. at this very fancy club in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And I didn't let this guy in. It's a famous story. I didn't let the guy in. And the guy yelled at me. He said, you better let me in. And he was really nasty. And I said, no. So he said, you're going to be fired in 15 minutes. I said, yeah, right. And 15 minutes later, I got fired, just like he said. And it was Swifty Lazar.
Swifty
Lazar, who was the most powerful, famous agent in the world. And I didn't let him in to his own party.
You were a good bouncer.
And I got fired.
Wow.
And I went home, and I sat at the edge of my bed, and I said, what am I going to do with my life? Should I go back to New York? And then I saw the card, my father's card I had in my house. In my apartment, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent. And I said, well, if they won't give me a great part, I'll write one myself. And I started writing about this killing that I saw.
Huh. And A Bronx Tale was born. And can you today look back now and can you believe the success you've had with that, what it's done for your career?
Yeah.
Robert De Niro saw the play and then ultimately bought the rights to your story.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, I've been doing A Bronx Tale, the one-man show I started. He came to see that. Yeah. Everybody wanted it, but they wanted to put a star on the role, and I refused. And I said, no, I'm playing Sonny, and I have to write it. And he agreed to that, Bob De Niro, and I ended up giving him the rights to it. And now it's been 30 years. It's the first time in the Guinness Book of Records, it's the first time anything's was done, any actor has written and starred in the play, the movie, the musical.
Hmm. And congratulations.
So
that's
it's
amazing.
Pretty exciting. And I still do the one-man show. I mean, I know we're here to talk about the musical, and the musical is going to be great. But I still do the one-man show. I'm at the Wellmont Theater in Montclair, New Jersey tomorrow night. And which is the 20th. And if anybody just goes on charlespalminteri.net, they'll know my schedule. But the most important thing is the musical is a big hit. A big hit on Broadway, and now it's on the road.
But in coming from where you came from, coming from the Bronx, you're hanging around all these wise guys, and your father was working for the city.
Yeah.
Going into show business, what kind of... That's a big jump, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't know anybody, but my mother and father always said, if that's what you want to do, then that's what you do. They said, if you got a dream, then you do it. But dream big. So I was blessed with parents that really encouraged me.
Yeah. And you know, what's amazing to me, Chaz, is when you're doing the play, you're playing, what, 18 roles?
18 characters.
Yeah. 18 characters.
Right.
I have a hard time remembering a paragraph. How do you... Do you have to continue, even though you wrote it and you conceptualize it, you still have to...
You still got
to
work on it.
You got to practice.
Yeah, I got to practice a little bit. When I know I'm doing it 3 or 4 days in advance, I start rehearsing it. Yeah, you know, I go on the treadmill and as I'm on the treadmill, I go over it, you know.
But which one's harder to create, the one-man play, the musical, or the movie?
Well, the one-man show is the original.
Yeah.
Right.
But each one holds up on its own. The movie is cinematic. That holds up on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And the musical is just phenomenal because Alan Menken, 8-time Academy Award winner, wrote the music. Glenn Slater, 3-time Tony nominee, the music, lyrics. Sergio Trillo, who did the choreographing, the dancing, the Tony winner. So, I mean, wow. Bob De Niro and Jerry Sachs co-directed it. You can't... We had a dream team and... To see the musical is really amazing, too. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
And for your career, after A Bronx Tale, then the next big one was Bullets Over Broadway, right? Which was a Woody Allen-directed film. You played Cheech.
Cheech, and I got...
You got an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor.
Yes, that was pretty amazing.
That is very amazing.
Yeah, and let's not forget Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
Wow, a classic movie
I've been
right.
really fortunate. I've been in... half a dozen of really classic movies.
Yeah,
I've been in 58 movies, but I've been in some classics. So,
but you know, people when they listen to this, they love to find out stuff behind the curtain.
Mm.
So let's begin. Robert De Niro, what's he like?
Bob's a great guy, man. Great artist, great guy, and great director.
Intense.
He's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do you do a scene with him and he says, "That was crap. Let's go back and do that again."
No, he doesn't say that. He just said, let's do it again, and again, and again, and again. And you do it as much as you can. No, Bob is a great artist, a great man, and I have much, much, much respect for him.
Was there challenges direct when you came out with the movie, since that was his first movie that he directed?
Yeah.
What kind?
Oh, challenges?
Yeah,
no, I don't think there was any challenges. I was very... excited to do it with him.
Did he allow to keep the original script in as much as possible
for
the movie version?
That's
terrific.
He protected me as the writer. No one else touched it but me. So, he believed in it. When he saw the one-man show, he knew it was there. And, he was very smart. He didn't want to change it. He just said, let's just tell the story.
Well, you know, what I see with a lot of movies like that is that the casting, though, obviously you, that's your life, you know?
Yeah.
But so many of the other people in that movie are from New York. They're from Brooklyn, Queens, downtown Manhattan. So it's people who are familiar with the way New York is.
Yeah, me, Bob, and Joe Pesci are the only actors in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Everyone else is
Everybody
from
else
New York.
Is a regular street guy.
And talking of Joe Pesci, who plays so well the unhinged, extremely volatile gangster that makes him so menacing.
Yeah.
He may be small in stature, but my God, he scares the hell out of you.
Well, he might be small in stature, but he's an incredible actor, and he's very big in weight. He has a lot of weight, like with his acting. He's grounded in realism and weight.
Yeah.
That's important.
You know, I heard the other day with Goodfellas and in The Godfather, there's so many guys around that movie who were either, really were gangsters or, that were around it, that wanted to get involved so badly. And that, they all said, oh, no, forget about it. Some guys got in. I mean, we had, from The Godfather,
Russo.
Yeah, Gianni Russo, who was involved. And he had a situation like that. For you, when you were making the movie, did you have people from back home saying, hey, let me get involved?
They were in the movie.
But how so? How did they do that?
Well, they said, "Could we audition?" I said, "Yeah." Some of them were able to do it and read really good. Some of them couldn't do it. So the ones that Bob liked, that we both looked at them, we said, "Look, he could do it." We put him in the movie. Yeah.
I'm still interested in these personalities and great names behind the scenes. Woody Allen, what was he like to work with?
It was great.
I mean, you got the Academy Award nomination. Yeah. So, you know,
really,
as a director.
Really smart. Like, really knows comedy really well, and a great writer, a very prolific writer, and really a great artist. He truly is a great artist.
And he really gets New York, of course. I mean, and he gets in his blood.
And he allows people to do that thing. He allowed me to say, he said, do your thing, Chaz, improv, you know, if you want to.
Do you worry about typecasting? You're a guy that comes from a tough neighborhood.
No.
You're in with the gangsters kind of story.
No, I don't worry about that.
Nope. You embrace that.
I embrace it. I say if it's a part that is three-dimensional and says something differently, yeah. Yeah. Then I don't worry about it. If it's just a part that I've played before and it's a Goomba idiot, then no, I won't do it. After Bronx Tale, I didn't want to play a gangster right away. But then when I got offered Bullets Over Broadway, and here was a gangster who was a genius playwright. I mean, that was like, come on.
How did the Usual Suspects, there's a story going around on Usual Suspects, is that they were trying to get the financing for it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big budget movie by any means.
$4 million.
But in order to seal the deal with the people who were financing, they wanted you. And other people read for the role. Pacino did and De Niro. And they said they wanted you, but you were never available at the right time for them. And then eventually you said, "I'm free, but I'm only good for a week."
That's correct.
And they said, "Great." And the money came in and the movie got made.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how I heard that story. I don't know how, you know, I can't make it. You know, say that's what happened. I did hear that story, and I've heard that from people on the set. But if, you know, great. But I was only available for a week. So what they did was we started the movie with me and Kevin Spacey, and they put us in a room for 7 days straight, and we shot all the scenes. Whoa. And then they started the movie right after that.
What was that like? Wow. I mean, Kevin Spacey, I mean, certainly he's had problems in his personal life, but as an actor, he's done so many incredible
roles. Kevin is one of the great actors.
Incredible roles.
Kevin is one of the great actors. He's a dear friend of mine, and he was great in the movie.
Yeah.
And he's truly a great actor.
Were you surprised at how popular that movie became? It really has become and still is a cult movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, when I read the script, I was like, wow, this is different. What is this? You know, it's so funny. People come over to me and they say, "Did you know that Kevin, who Kaiser Sose was when you read it?" I said, "I was in the movie and I still don't know." You know, because you don't know who's telling the truth, who's lying.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the script won the Academy Award.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Christopher McQuarrie, I mean, script is like brilliant.
It is.
I mean, what do you write after that? I don't know. You know,
when you're producing the movie, when you're reading the scripts, I've never been in a play. I've never been in a movie. Never been in a play. Can you get the sense though when you're reading a script, saying this is a hit or saying this is really good? But
is this a hit? No, no one could tell you if it's a hit or not. You could read it. I could read it because I do rewrites on things, and I'm blessed with this thing where I could read it and know what's wrong with it or how to fix it. But when I read that, I was like, wow, this is really different. And people asked me, "Did you know it was hit?" Of course not, no. But I knew it was different. And I said, well, if the director could get this down, who knows? You know, you don't know. No one ever knows. You could, like, you know, if a script is, like, I read some great scripts where I read and I went, wow, gee. I remember when I read Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wanted to be in that movie.
Really?
Because originally Red was not black.
Oh.
He was white. So I read that. Like, I wanted to play that part.
What a great movie.
What a great. Oh. And
yeah.
And everything.
And look back at it, I mean, who else but Morgan Freeman could have done that? So they made the right choice. But when I read the script, I was like, wow. When I read Saving Private Ryan, I went, whoa.
Yeah.
This is a great script. So when I read Braveheart, you just read it and go,
"That's stirring stuff."
To me, it was stirring. Now, can you guarantee it's going to be a hit from reading it? No. But I knew when I read it, I was moved. Mm-hmm. That, you know.
Do you still write?
Yeah, very much. I'm writing now, yeah.
What are you writing now? Just give us.
I could tell you briefly. I'm writing a play now. It's a play for Broadway. We'll see.
Mm. And where do the ideas come from? You don't have to give it away. But where do the ideas? Are you just walking down the street? You see something? Something spots something?
Well, an idea happens. It has to happen over years. Well, I'm thinking about it a year or two, and then I go, all right, I have it in my head. This has to come out now.
And is it something that's happened to you, again, like a Bronx Tale?
No, it's something that I want to talk about. Hmm. I want to write a play. Right now I'm writing a play about veterans. When I see 22 veterans a day commit suicide, how is that? How is that possible? I've been to Walter Reed Hospital, and I've been there, and I say, what was the first thing you thought about after I saw this one guy, he had no legs and one arm.
God forbid.
And I said, what did you want to do? And he said, I want to go back to my men.
Ugh.
Yeah.
How do they say that?
Bad.
And they mean that.
Yeah.
It's not, this is not, you know, bragging. They mean that.
Yeah.
They want to go back in. They want to go back to war.
It's remarkable.
How could that be possible?
I don't know.
So I think... And how could we not help these people?
Yeah. It should be number one priority.
Mm-hmm. Number one. You give your life for your country, and we're giving you, and the government's giving you a hard time about collecting something? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That's why the Fisher House, who I try to do some things for, the Fisher House, they give veterans homes. Homes. You got a home.
It's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. How could we not give them anything they want? We weren't there. I wasn't there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did this for us.
Yeah.
And we're giving veterans, you know, a hard time about sometimes about collecting money or the first responders. Oh. Is there a problem here?
Mm-hmm.
They're all dying from 9/11 and we're giving them a hard time. Oh, no, no, no.
And they can't see a decent doctor. The VA, the healthcare system with VA is still broken.
John Stewart has been terrific in getting behind that. Do you ever get into political stuff at all, Chaz?
Yeah, I don't talk about my political beliefs because, you know, I believe that's private for me. But everyone knows how I feel about policemen, about law enforcement, especially the NYPD, state troopers. I'm out there all the time. I'm doing doing something for Blue Lives Matter.
Joe Imperatrice.
Yeah, with Joe Imperatrice.
Yeah,
that's right, with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing that. And I'm behind my police, my law enforcement. I mean, people throwing water on them. And
disgusting. Don't get me started.
Could we stop?
That.
Don't get me
throwing
started.
Throwing milk on them? Oh, my God.
I mean, I always tell people, really?
Yeah.
If you got something against the cops, when someone's breaking into your home and you dial 911, who's coming?
Yeah.
It's not the guy who's throwing milk at you.
Yes, right, exactly.
It's a thankless job. People don't appreciate what you have to go through.
It's a thankless job.
You put your life on the line. You're not getting rich.
Right.
You're trying to serve your community. And look, yet they're you know, I mean...
Absolutely right. I mean, the police, not in my book. Nobody's like criticizing the police in front of me. That's out. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm behind the police all the time. Look, did a few times, was there a bad apple?
Sure.
And you know, people don't realize, you know who hates a bad cop the most? Good cops.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Good cops.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Is there a bad apple once in a while and they make them and they do something that's wrong? Absolutely. And should he go to jail? Absolutely. But you can't criticize all the great men and women in our police force.
Well, we just commemorated, I say commemorate, we just had the 9/11. I can't believe it's been 18 years.
18 years.
18 years. Were you in the city that day, Chaz?
No, I was in L.A.
You were in L.A.
Right.
But you must have seen it like everyone else. Said, what the hell's going
what
on?
What the hell is going on
in
here?
New York?
And there's still political correctness.
Yes.
Okay, that congresswoman, some people did something.
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you what they did.
Don't even.
I'll tell you what they did. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. Some people did something?
Yeah.
You know the lives that were lost, not only the 3,000 lives, excuse me, but what about all the men and fathers and sons and daughters and children that are still suffering.
Mm-hmm. You know, someone said the other day, oh, they're playing all this stuff again. We need to get over this. And I said, no. You
mm-hmm.
need to watch it every time.
Do you know?
Never forget.
Do you know this gentleman who just was messing up the American Airlines
yes,
plane?
The mechanic, mm-hmm. yes.
The mechanic? Excuse me, you were doing that for overtime?
Yes.
No, you weren't.
No.
It's coming out now that his brother was in ISIS.
Yes.
And that he had these videos. Let's stop with this political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
Could we stop with this, please?
Oh, you can't say things now.
Well, you know what? That even if it was for, okay, let's say even if it was for overtime, excuse me, what about the plane went down?
Yes.
That's attempted murder.
Yes. Yes.
Got blood on
attempted
your hands.
Murder.
Well, and it's very frightening to think of, this is just one case.
Mm-hmm.
That's one case.
Yeah. But who knows?
Well, you know, the saddest thing is that it seems like right now that supporting law enforcement is a political side.
Like,
you're racist. That's my political.
No, you're racist.
That's
but yeah,
racist?
That's my political view that I'm supporting. That should just be a standard, right?
Sure.
I support education. I support, you know, freedom of speech. I support law enforcement. That's, now it's a political issue if you support it.
Wow.
I'm sorry. If that's an issue for other people, like I said, I am not
just saying, I am not a Republican.
I am not a Democrat. Yeah. I'm an independent.
Me too.
For common sense.
Yes.
And all I ask, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
I didn't vote for either one of them. Okay? All I am and all I like to say is, hey, could we use common sense? That's all I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm asking.
And you know, you guys say about not forgetting 9/11. The scary thing, too, I think that if we stop playing these videos, if we stop talking about it, it could easily become something like Pearl Harbor Day. Because today, Pearl Harbor Day, people are like, oh, look, oh, it's Pearl Harbor Day. Was it December 7th? See, like, I can't remember the date off the top of my head. December 7th,
yep.
Right? And if we stop showing the video talking about every September 11th,
right,
it's going to become an afterthought.
No, you have
it should
to.
Be the biggest day every year.
That's why you have to talk about it, and you have to talk about the Holocaust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't forget that
mm-hmm.
because years from now, let me tell you something. All the Holocaust people are
going to be dead.
Children are going to be dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know what they say, the classic, line. I don't want to get like just ridiculous here. But it's so classic is when those who forget history are doomed to repeat it.
That's exactly right.
And there's a reason why they say that line. I mean, mm-hmm. we can't forget that.
Yeah.
You must have law and order in the streets.
You have to.
You cannot be throwing water on policemen, milk on policemen.
It's horrible.
These are the people that get it. Listen, I've done more things. I've tried to do as much as I can for the policemen's widows. You want to see what that's like? You want to see a family without their father?
Mm-hmm.
We've also seen a string of suicides among police officers. Yeah.
Many suicides among police officers.
Especially in New York.
Yeah.
Especially in New York. And I'm trying to help that. With Joe, Joe and Patrice has done so much.
He has. He's great.
Single-handedly, this guy has done so much and tried to get more people involved here. And I stand behind him, and I'm backing him, because we cannot forget our first responders. We cannot forget 9/11.
No.
You know what bothered me about? Oh, don't get me started.
No.
I'm
right there with you.
I went to the memorial downtown.
Yeah.
And I'm walking through it, and they took me for a special tour, and I was very happy for them.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, I see this little room at the end, and I go, "What's that?" And I see the photos of the 18 hijackers.
Yep.
And I said, excuse me. I said to the young lady, why is that here? Why is that soiling up all of these people here? She goes, well, political correctness, we had to put.
Why?
Why?
It's absolutely ridiculous.
I need to know their names. I need to have a photo
of
them.
I never want to see
them?
Their face again.
I need to see their faces.
That should be down
kidding?
In Guantanamo Bay.
That should be gone.
That's actually a very painful thing to do.
That's painful to me.
They have a whole part of showing how the ISIS, Al Qaeda was started.
No.
Look,
I don't want to.
Should be a memorial of the people who lost.
Is that a bad thing to any Muslim? Of course not. I'm dear close to my friends of mine. They're very close to them. And they're the first ones to tell you.
Yeah, that's not.
I want them out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been to Saudi Arabia. Mm. I've been to 8 cities in Saudi Arabia. I've been to Bahrain. I've been to Dubai. I have dear friends who are Muslims. And the first thing they tell me, oh, my God, we hate them who do this.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. They're the first ones to tell you that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very much that, hey, man, if you're an Italian-American and you commit a terrorist act and you do wrong, go to jail for the rest of your life.
Right, right.
Okay? Go to jail for the rest of your life. That's how I feel.
All right, let's take a deep breath, because believe me, I could really go on about this.
Hey, I'm sorry. You're on the same
page. No,
I'm supposed to talk about my music.
Nah, man.
Well, let's
and
come.
You got me on a rant here.
let's come back to that, Chaz. Tell us again about the musical.
You know what I love about the musical is the message that it gives. The saddest thing in life is wasted talent. And that's why I tell these people, they bring their kids, they bring 11, 12-year-old young boys and girls, and they see it and they understand it. They understand that every decision they make means it has consequences for the rest of their life.
Absolutely.
And that's what I love about A Bronx Tale, the musical especially.
Do you sing and dance in this?
Oh, no. I was in the musical.
Yeah.
But I'm not in the musical now. I'm just doing the one-man show now. Nick Cordero, who was brilliant, who played Sonny in the musical, was wonderful. Actually, we have an incredible cast of new people in the new show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, it's a show that I guarantee it. It's a show you will never forget. Alfred Hitchcock used to say, there's only 3 things you can do to an audience. And if you do 2 out of 3, you have a hit. Well, in Bronx Tale, we do all 3. He says you can make them laugh, you can make them cry, or you could scare them. That's it. That's all you could do to an audience.
Hitchcock scared a lot of people.
Hitchcock scared a lot of people.
It makes me feel laugh.
Right. In Bronx Tale, we do all 3. So I tell people, if you have a chance, go see A Bronx Tale, the musical. It's an incredible, incredible show.
Can I ask you, why did you choose to play Sonny and not your father?
Because I didn't want to play my dad. I just didn't feel right playing my father. And I knew Sonny was the more flashier role. And I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I get that.
And I did that. Yeah. People always say that to me. Why did you? People, a lot of people ask me that.
Well, and also, I always thought, the whole thing with the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
Did you stop becoming a Yankees fan after that?
No.
So they're still close to your heart?
Oh, I'm a diehard Yankee fan.
So Sonny didn't make you stop watching and caring?
No, but I did. I cried, but then I didn't cry like for weeks.
Yeah. Right.
And then I would think, wait a minute, he's not paying my rent. What is it?
That's right.
Forget it.
Yeah.
But I'm still such a diehard Yankee fan that it upsets me very dearly when they lose. That's why I'm
there. They haven't been too much this year.
I was going to say, they're looking really good.
We have to go all the way now.
Yes. It's you, the Astros, the Dodgers, maybe the Braves.
Well, this is the crazy thing about the Yankees. They have so much talent that pretty much every single one of their starters on the mound, on the field, have missed significant time.
Yeah.
And they're still...
Well, that's... Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, they deserve all the credit. I mean, they
smart
did an
guys.
Amazing, amazing job. You know, all the Steinbrenner family.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just an amazing job. Mm-hmm. So you got to give the back office, the president, the vice presidents, all of them. So as far as I'm concerned, Randy Levine, the president, you got to give them all credit for what they did. It's a great organization. What are they worth? $5 billion now?
Something like that.
Bought it for $10 million.
Yeah,
so,
it's a pretty good investment.
You got to give them all credit for they made that incredible into a.
You still live in New York now, obviously.
I live in New York. I live in Westchester. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm from Westchester.
You're from Westchester.
Yeah, Scarsdale.
Oh, Scarsdale. Okay. Yeah. But I come down here a lot. I have my restaurant, Chaz Palminteri's, a restaurant, Italian restaurant, 30 West. 46th Street, one of the best Italian restaurants.
You cooking there or no?
No, I don't cook. I
cook. You're the taster.
I'm a taster, man. But if you want great Italian food, you come there, and you'll see me. I'm there usually a lot. I'm there a lot on Wednesday
nights.
So it's
on what, 46?
46th and between 5th and 6th, 30 West 46th.
It's just around the corner from
here.
Oh,
What's the best dish? Everything.
Listen to me, everything.
Okay.
We get the fish every day. Yeah. We make our own pasta. And I say one of the best because there's a lot of great Italian restaurants in the city. But this is truly one of the best. And you get a chance to see me.
That's worth the price of admission right there.
Chaz
Palminteri, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. You're still working. You're going to be doing your one-man show.
One-man show, you go to chazpalminteri.net, and it gives you my whole schedule.
Chaz, thanks so much for being here. It's been terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening in. We'll see you back here next time.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.